MindVibe, a mental health podcast for everyone. Since our first episode in 2016, we have been sharing stories of recovery, engaging with experts, and tackling the stigma associated with mental illness. The MindVibe podcast is produced by Ontario Shores Center for Mental Health Sciences and is available on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts.
So welcome to the MindVine podcast. This is actually episode 92 of our mental health podcast. And I'm your host, Daryl Mathers. And today we have this very special guest. He's a student, a mental health advocate, and somebody who's really close to the work we do at Ontario Shores. Welcome Sterling Renzoni. Welcome,
Sterling. Yeah, thank you for having me on, Daryl. I appreciate it.
Well, hopefully we have a really robust conversation today about all the work you're doing. It's hard to imagine somebody so young and so busy, all the things you do for mental health. But maybe we can just start by, you know, talking about your personal
connection. Yeah, for sure. So the reason I'm so involved in mental health and advocacy is because of my own personal experience. When I was in high school, all the stress and anxiety that was associated with that transition from elementary to high school, really built up, and it led me to look for something in my life that I could control. And at the time, I looked for things, and I found my relationship with food and exercise. And this is something that, gradually I started controlling and obsessing around a bit more and more, and it ended up, morphing into an eating disorder. I was first hospitalized with my eating disorder over the March break of grade 9, and that started the cycle of being like in and out of inpatient and outpatient treatment. For the next 3 years, the rest of my high school life was spent doing that. And it was hard. I struggled. And at times I felt like I was, very alone in my battle, and that I wasn't going to be able to escape the grasp of my eating disorder. Thankfully, though, I had the opportunity to engage in resources, and I was able to access Ontario Shores as a patient. And going to Ontario Shores and receiving the support and the individual therapy that I needed. And then the pandemic struck, which presented some additional challenges, and I had to receive virtual care at that point. I was able to utilize the supports and skills that I had built up over the years. And despite the challenges that the pandemic brought with it for my mental health, I was able to recover during the pandemic and get to a point where I was mentally and physically healthy enough to not only get a job, but also go to university. And that is something, I'm super proud of and super happy of, super happy about. And that's both my experience that have been good and bad, in the healthcare system and battling mental illness. Those have shaped my perspective and shaped what I want to do with my life. And, once I sort of left the hospital at Ontario Shores and left, being an inpatient, I sort of realized that I really wanted to have the chance to give back to the healthcare system and to shape it in a way that, to ensure that the people that come after me that are battling an illness, whether it be mental or physical, don't have to battle the healthcare system in addition to their illness to get the support and care that they need. And that's been something I really carry forward to this day.
Just as you're explaining your experience, it feels like you're wise beyond your years in terms of your perspective with healthcare, because it's something that, as a member of the healthcare system, Ontario Shores and its partners have been working to kind of shape it and morph it into something that's more user-friendly, if you will. And here, you're still very young, and I know it wasn't as simple as going to Ontario Shores, right? You talked about those 4 years, just the transition years as you're struggling in elementary school and high school. And I know you were at other organizations as well. And you talk about, wanting the system to improve and to make change and to evolve. Were there things in particular that you experienced in your journey of, navigating the system that really stand out to you that you'd like to see changed or improved upon as we?
Yeah, so I think some of the big ones are, the transition points in my care, whether it be going from an inpatient at another hospital to being an outpatient, those were the points where I really struggled. Those were the points where I went from, doing okay to, relapsing back into my eating disorder. And I think, those are the spots that I really see where improvement can be made. But, I also see it, being made at sort of the education awareness and detection level, right? Family doctors, general practitioners, they're the front line of our mental health care system at the moment. That's where the majority of people seek care. I want to see it to get to a point where, they have the resources, they feel like they're equipped to deal with, diagnosing and, being there to be the front line for people seeking care. And that's something that, I experienced the lack of awareness, not just within the medical system, but outside of it too, like in the education system. I battled my eating disorder before it sort of got noticed for almost a year. I don't want it to have to be that way for other people.
When you talk about, mental health and eating disorders, they do, they are hand in hand. Even though society may just be coming to grips with the fact that an eating disorder is a mental illness, and it feels like there's awareness levels that we have to reach from a mental health perspective, but even more so from the eating disorders perspective. And you being a male going through this, it's not as rare as people think for males to experience eating disorders, but the perception is that it's not something that impacts males greatly. So was that something, was there a stigma associated just with being a male and receiving care and for an eating disorders that, something
Yeah,
that
no, for sure.
you
That's
want to
definitely
tackle?
something that I dealt with, and it was the point where I internalized a lot of it, so I developed that sort of internalized stigma around it. It's tough, like even the mental illness side of it too. Like I can think back to when I was first hospitalized in grade 9, and then came back to school, and people were like, "Oh, like why were you gone for two weeks from school?" And I was like, "Oh, like I had heart issues." And while that was true because my eating disorder got to the point where it was causing me heart issues, I felt like I couldn't be honest and say I was hospitalized for an eating disorder because of the fact, being a man, that the whole stereotype of being the tough guy who doesn't need to deal with their emotions and that sort of a thing, but also the fact that I was worried would people look at me differently because I said I had a mental illness. And that was the part that worried me in that regard. And I had to sort of, deal with that. But I think like it's hard. Like that's part of the reason why I want to do this, why I'm so vocal about it, is because I want other men and other people with eating disorders to be able to look up and see people that have gone through a similar fight that they have, and to see them talking about it. And I guess the other thing is too, to see someone who is like me, who's recovered, out there in the media or really anywhere, to be able to look out there and see that, it's possible for me too, because someone else similar to me did it as well. That's something I've been really working towards, and part of the reason why, I'm here today talking to you, because I want to make sure that people listening, people in the community, see that, it is possible for someone that's a man to have an eating disorder, and to be able to talk about it is something that, is important as well.
People sometimes go years or decades, struggling with something before they talk about it with friends, let alone publicly. And in addition to being on a guest on a podcast, you've blogged for us. I know you've done some media work as well. And as I mentioned before, you're still very early in the stages of life to be so open and honest about something that was very difficult for you earlier in your life. How was it for you getting to the point where you felt comfortable sharing? Like all the things that you mentioned are great reasons, and there are reasons that are commonly cited for people who share their story, but you have to come to grips with it yourself before you start sharing your story publicly. So what was that process like before you kind of just wrote up a book?
It was an interesting experience, I think, for sure. Like in the sense that I wasn't like I was the opposite of open about it. I wouldn't even tell my friends really what I was going through all throughout high school. And it really was leaving high school and going off to university. When I was selecting my universities, I picked Trent because they have a chapter of Active Minds called Trent Active Minds, and it's a sort of campus mental advocacy group. And that was sort of the reason why I picked Trent, because they had this group. And when I got to Trent, I reached out to this group and was talking to them, and they have something called Mental Health Mondays, where they highlight an experience of someone at the university who's been dealing with mental illness. And so I shared my story first to that platform. I was very nervous about it, very, very nervous about it, but it was received well. And that was, having that positive experience of sharing my story and having people like care about it and being able to relate to it. That part was the reason why I think I continue to want to share my story. In high school, I might not have had the same experience, and I didn't feel like I'd have that experience. There were times where some off comments were made to myself in high school about whether it was the way I looked or why I was missing so much school. Having that be sort of a negative experience or not a positive one, and then going to university and then having a positive experience sharing my story, that really changed my perspective of what sharing my story meant for myself.
A lot of people I've talked to over the years who have shared their story have said that one of the things that maybe they weren't expecting when they went public was I guess the accountability that it brought to them, their own health. So, like for people who may not quite understand, when you have a mental illness or you're struggling with something, you're managing your health constantly. Right, it's work, and it's choices in a lot of instances, and they felt that by sharing their story, it's made them more accountable to managing their health, and I wonder, and maybe prevented them from relapsing or struggling at times, or helping them get to a point where they're healthier. Have you felt that at all? That by being so public, that you've been, it's actually improved
I
your
think it
health.
has. I think it seems odd in the sense that sharing something like with the media has helped me be more open with my own friends. But that has definitely happened. Sharing it in the media has made me more open with my own friends about these sort of things. It's made it easier to talk about it. In a sense, it's helped. With keep myself on track, knowing that I have this whole like. The whole advocacy part is a reason why I keep fighting, right? I keep fighting to ensure that other people, don't have to go through the same struggles that I had, accessing care and that sort of thing. That's, one of the reasons I keep fighting on the days that get really hard. And that's been really meaningful for me. But I think on sort of the contrary there, sometimes it's hard being so out in the media with mental illness in the sense that sometimes it feels like, you have to present this picture of being all together all the time. And even though I'm well on the path to recovery, there are some days where I still do struggle. And I think that's been the hard part of being so open is also having to acknowledge that even people who are mental health advocates and are well off on the way to recovery still have bad days, and they still have days where they struggle and need to access supports. And that's been something that I've had to come to terms with, and it's something I'm finally got to the point where I'm comfortable still, saying when I have a bad day, when I'm not having a good day, even though I, am a mental health advocate, I still need support and resources myself. So that's been something I've been working on.
So we're talking just before Bell Let's Talk Day, which is January 26th, and we're going to publish this on Bell Let's Talk Day for social media consumption and to help raise money for mental health programs and across Canada. And somebody who's considerably older than you, I remember a time where there was nothing in the media around mental health, And even though I've been working in mental health, I guess coming on 16 years, it's only been around that time that these conversations have been happening, or at least you'd see stories, and you see what Bell Let's Talk has done, and it's remarkable, right? Even it's more than just one day a year, the one day a year. It's phenomenal to see so many stories on social media, and the campaign that they run all over the place as well. But as somebody who lives with, mental health issues and been, kind of on your recovery journey, I'd like to know, like, from your perspective, like, what do you like about Bell Let's Talk? And what does it, do for you? And what maybe would you, how would you like to see it
Yeah,
maybe evolve?
I like the idea of Bell Let's Talk. I like having the idea of having, a time where people, take time to, raise awareness about mental illness. I think it's a good catalyst for other events at different organizations to build off of. And it makes it easier for people who may not feel comfortable to raise awareness about things to do it. Whether it be sharing their own story or sharing someone else's story or promoting it, like those sort of things. I think it's a good catalyst for those sort of things. I think one of the things is that that I wish we could build upon is a lot of the awareness spreading seems almost performative or temporary in a sense. I think there's a difference between, sharing a raising awareness and being aware of things when it's in where it's cool. But I think, the real challenge is keeping that open mind, keeping that awareness when it's not front and center, when it's not Bell Let's Talk Day, for example. And, I think that's when the awareness and keeping the open mind and, the non-judgmental attitude really comes in, and where it comes down to action as well. I think those are things that can be built upon, but I really do like the idea of having Bell Let's Talk Day, where it's a catalyst to these sort of conversations that help us move forward in the conversation about mental health and mental illness.
Bell Let's Talk has done a great job of kind of normalizing mild to moderate mental health issues. Like being able, the whole, even this year, if you've seen any of the campaign materials, while it's Let Bell Let's Talk, their focus is on listening and being present, and for people who may be struggling. And I, and anybody connected to mental health would applaud that. I think one of the things that as a society that we still struggle with is accepting complicated or severe mental illness. And how do we, from your perspective as an advocate, how do we get society to be more empathetic and understanding to mental illnesses that are a little bit messier, that you may not want to put on a commercial or on a billboard, some of the things that you're experiencing?
Yeah,
How do we get to that
I
point?
like that's definitely a very valid question. It's something, I experienced as a patient too, like being, in a hospital with people that may be experiencing different symptoms you're experiencing. But I think part of it as a patient that was really eye-opening is seeing the person in those people that are struggling, and being able to see that they're more than their mental illness, even though they may be struggling. To see that some days they do have good days, some days they do have bad days, and they look different for everybody. I think, having people talk about it, and ensuring that we don't, reinforce the stereotypes of those people, the stereotype that, people with mental illness, act in criminal ways all the time, like those, or that they're, dangerous. Those sort of stereotypes that are out there, really do perpetuate the sort of biases that people look at and when they see these people with mental illness. I think it takes conversation about mental illness and mental health, and including people with, severe and complex cases of mental illness in those conversations. So it's not, the typical ones that are included, like depression, anxiety, the ones that we talk about, and all they may be really challenging, they may be acute, but we need to go beyond what we're comfortable talking about and sort of push the narrative a bit on some of the ones that might be a bit messier to talk about. But I think we've got a good start. We just got to keep expanding who we include in the conversation when we talk about mental health and mental illness beyond what we're comfortable with. Sometimes we have to be uncomfortable in order to create real change.
You mentioned just in passing your experience as, an inpatient in a hospital, and I know you've had several experiences before you came in to Ontario Shores, but Ontario Shores, the eating disorders unit, is quite unique within Ontario Shores. Just the physical structure of the unit itself is unique to the rest of the building. And I wonder if you could talk about your experience there, like the type of treatment you received, like what was it, what were some of the catalysts in terms of promoting your own recovery in terms of the treatment you received
So
around the
I think
unit?
for me, so I've been hospitalized before going to Ontario Shores. I was initially coming to Ontario Shores, I was super nervous about going to Ontario Shores, right? It was somewhere new. And driving up to Ontario Shores, it's this big building. Once I got to the eating disorders unit at Ontario Shores, I felt really welcomed. One of the things that was new to me was having sort of little rounds on the unit where all the patients sort of came together, the staff came together. We had a conversation about what we wanted to do, what needed to be changed. I really from day one, I felt like connected with my co-patients, with the staff, and that's something I felt really meaningful. I learned a lot, not only from the staff, but my co-patients who were around me. I found those connections to be meaningful while I was there. The other important thing was, obviously managing my nutrition and making sure I was able to eat enough and eat enough diversity of foods. But also, pre-pandemic, things like going grocery shopping, normalizing those things that I had to sort of relearn how to do again. Things that, might for the average person seem like a no big deal, were challenging for me, like going grocery shopping and having to be able to do those experiences in a controlled and safe environment, were really helpful for me because that's something as a university student I have to be able to do now. And so learning those skills at Ontario Shores, was really important for me. The other thing were we had a lot of groups, whether it be an anxiety group, whether it be a DBT group. I'd done those things in the past, but at Ontario Shores, they were sort of structured in a way that was a lot more engaging. They really put an effort on what do the patients want to get out of this group, what do they want, what's engaging for them. And I think one of the other really meaningful things for me, being a student who really cares about their academics, I was able to continue my schooling on Ontario Shores, which was really nice. Albeit I was virtual learning. Before it was cool at Ontario Shores from my high school, but I managed to do it. Being able to keep a little bit of a sense of normalcy, I guess, of what I was used to, of being able to do school, and being able to, pre-COVID, go out into the community and do outings and do, whether it be going to the bowling alley at Ontario Shores or going to play pool, having those activities that brought with it a sense of enjoyment, even though I was struggling, I was fighting an illness that was really painful at times, opened my eyes to what life could be without an eating disorder. And I think those were really meaningful because they, despite the hard days, I was able to, keep in mind what was waiting for me on the other side of battling my eating disorder. And that was what kept me going when I was struggling.
It's kind of fitting because you're kind of your journey at Ontario Shores started inpatient and then virtual because of the pandemic. And I've read that eating disorders among youth has actually increased during the pandemic for a variety of reasons. And people are always looking for resources and information to help, whether it's their child or a friend or whomever. From your perspective, like if you were talking to somebody who was concerned, whether it would be a parent or somebody concerned about their friend who might be struggling with an eating disorder, like what kind of advice?
Yeah, that was, you know, one of the things that might have been challenging in the pandemic is a lot of the traditional resources might have been harder to access. Like it was harder to go in person to get supports for things. But I mean, at the same time, a lot of virtual resources sort of either popped up or shifted to virtual. And, you know, that was one of the good things, I hate to say good things about the pandemic, but one of the things that, you know, changed in a positive direction because of the pandemic was an increase in access to virtual services. You know, for example, I was a, you know, after leaving Ontario Shores, I went to, you know, a few groups at Sheena's Place in Toronto, which is a sort of nonprofit that offers like free support groups and stuff for people with eating disorders that don't, you don't even need a diagnosis to access. And it was, in a sense, affirming because you go to talk to, you go to these groups on Zoom from the comfort of your own home. And, you know, you're able to, you know, meet with other people that also have an eating disorder that are also going through a similar challenge, and having that, you know, connection with other people, you know, with a lived experience to be able to talk to you, some people further along than you, some people just starting their journey. We had some really meaningful conversations in those groups that, you know, I found meaningful, especially in the sense that, you know, it was something that was really easy for me to access because it was virtual. And I think, you know, what I really recommend for, you know, whether it be parents or friends is, you know, you can start with expressing your concerns to the person that you think is struggling. And, you know, be cognizant of the fact that you don't want to be accusatory of them when you're telling them about these concerns, you know, using the I perspective, those sort of things. But also, you know, make sure you're educated on eating disorders, whether it be going to NEDIC, which is the National Eating Disorders Information Center. They have resources, they have, you know, educational resources, they have, you know, directories of different service providers and that sort of thing. Really looking at what resources you can to offer. And sometimes it does take looking for resources, but there are resources out there. And at the same time, utilizing what you already have, whether it be a family doctor or a therapist, using those resources that you've already, you know, established and got access to. But, you know, it is hard. It is hard to battle an eating disorder. And it's also, you know, I can imagine as a parent, it's hard to watch your child or to watch your friend struggle, because, you know, it can feel like at times that what you're doing doesn't have an impact. But what I would say is, you know, sometimes it's the little things that matter, like, you know, being able to take the person out for a fun outing or something that, you know, maybe doesn't focus on food to sort of build that connection. Or, you know, maybe it's just having a conversation about what they're feeling or what they're dealing with. And just having an open ear to listen to them and validate how they're feeling. Sometimes those little things really do have an impact.
Yeah, I mean, it's great advice and real tangible things for people, you know, to do to support somebody they love who's struggling. It is Eating Disorders Week next week, February 1st to 7th. We talked about that before we started filming. And, you know, it's kind of fitting with Bell Let's Talk being this week and Eating Disorders Week being next week and having you on to talk about it. You know, just a couple more things. And one thing I'm curious about is, you know, your thoughts on kind of from a cultural perspective. We, you know, never in our history have there been more cooking and food shows in the and reality shows. I mean, like, there's so many things associated with food that I would say are questionable or controversial. We have calorie counters and, you know, at every restaurant and menu now that are mandated, but the intent is to help to promote healthy choices. But I wonder from your perspective, if you can, like, somebody would look at that and they'd be like, okay, that helps me make a decision for my day. But if you're struggling with an eating disorder and you see all these numbers and calories and different things like that and information on food, like, what's that experience like for you or somebody with an eating disorder?
Yeah, no, you really nailed it on the head. That part is really, really hard. Like, you know, it's something that, you know, even though I consider myself well on the way to recovery, to this day, you know, the association with those numbers is still there, right? And, it feels almost like a magnet to look at it. Like, I can try not to look at it, but, you know, it feels almost like there's this weird draw to look at it because, you know, that was a part of my eating disorder. A part of my eating disorder was using these calorie trackers, using these exercise trackers all the time. and obsessing about the numbers and, making sure it was under a certain number, and all these sort of things that, were a part of my eating disorder are now, mandated to be on menus everywhere. I can't not look at them, which, even at university presented some extra challenges. They're on all the menus at university, and it's, it's hard. Some days, even to this day, if I'm really struggling, it's still a challenge where I almost feel like I'm drawn to look and focus on those numbers. But I think one thing that's really changed for myself, and it's because I'm no longer at a point where those numbers have as much meaning to me as they did when I was really struggling. But I like to this day, what I do if I'm really having a bad day is if I'm at a restaurant, I'll just be like, oh, like, what's the special today? What do you recommend I get? And then I don't even have to look at the numbers and decide. I can just ask the person what they recommend. And at university, that's been something that's been really helpful. But yeah, I think it's hard. And that's one of the things that, during the pandemic has also been hard. And perhaps why there's been an increase in eating disorders over the course of the pandemic has been, social media, whether it be, seeing these extreme fitness and extreme, food restriction videos on social media, and having people spend more time on social media during the pandemic. Those are two things that, might go hand in hand to leading to people who were vulnerable to an eating disorder, leaning more in that direction with the increase in, content related to it. I think it's hard. And I think for myself, part of the reason I struggled when I was, discharged to virtual treatment, when I went to virtual treatment from Ontario Shores or from any other inpatient setting, is you go from an inpatient setting where there's no social media really allowed, for good reason, right, where you're not allowed to look at Instagram or these social media accounts, perhaps because of the content that's out there, to, being out in the virtual world again. And I had to really sit down and, change my feed, change my Instagram feed. Who was I following? What was I looking at? And that wasn't something that was easy. It took a concerted effort of sitting down and, okay, I'm going to unfollow this, not look at this. Because the algorithms with these social media platforms, they can enhance your biases, right? You look at something, you spend time looking at it, you like it maybe, then that's basically all your feed turns into. So I had to really make an effort when I was at the place in my recovery to go on social media and change everything that I was looking at to make it a more positive environment for myself.
Would you recommend, the parents of kids who, even if they're not, exhibiting signs of an eating disorder, but, I'd say we're all kind of vulnerable to, in some respects. Would you suggest to parents to take a hard look at, at their children's, whether it's Instagram or social media? I'm talking about maybe, 13, 14, 15 year olds. Like, would you, as somebody who's been through that and had to make those changes, you'd be like, you better get on
yeah,
there and
I mean,
see what they're
I think
doing.
That's a fine line to walk because, in a sense, I was a teenager too. I don't necessarily want my parents, snooping through my phone. I think that would feel really weird on my part. I guess as parents, you got to do what you got to do to keep your kids safe. But I think, there really needs to be a push to put social media literacy as a part of health in schools. There needs to be a focus on, okay, how do you maintain a safe social media environment for yourself? So we get to a point where, our youth know what they're doing when they're on social media, and they know how to keep themselves safe, not only from, whether it be cyberbullying, but also from the kinds of content and, fake news, things that, might not be helpful for them to look at or on social media to keep themselves safe. Because I think there will always be ways where, even as someone struggling with an eating disorder, you can go around what your parents are doing. You can hide it a bit better. So I think there really has to be a push to make sure that youth and students, we know how to do it ourselves so we can be independent, because there'll always be a time where the parents aren't around and your kids have to make a decision for themselves. And I think that's where the push needs to be.
That's a great point. It'd probably go a lot further than just having your child's phone and making decisions for them. So you mentioned a couple times that you're in school. Can you tell us like what you're doing, what you're taking, and what do you hope
yeah,
for?
Yeah, so I'm taking a joint major in chemistry and psychology at Trent University. I'm in my second year. I was really inspired by one of the doctors that I met who did their undergrad in biochemistry, and that sort of led me into the chemistry side. And then my own personal experience with mental illness really pushed me into going into the psychology route. And, one day, hopefully being in a role, whether it be clinical psychology or psychiatry or psychopharmacology, to, add that lived experience to, policy decisions or to, my own direction, whether it be in diagnosing or treating someone. One thing, that is really meaningful to me is the power of lived experience. I've seen it from myself, but other from other people and shaping things. I want to be, that professional where, I can relate to what some of the patients are going through and be able to look at it not just from a professional and research and academic lens, but also from a, I've experienced this. How would I like to be treated? How do I not want to be treated? And really be able to carry that forward. I love school at the moment. I've always loved school. It's challenging managing the increase in academic stress. But I'm sure to reach out to my therapist, my resources that I have. And the other meaningful part of being at university is that I'm also a part of Active Minds at my university. I've become the community outreach coordinator. And so my role is to really reach out to our community partners and get our community partners engaged in events. Like next week, we're going to be hosting Sheena's Place up for a sort of educational and awareness event at Trent virtually. But it's nice to come full circle and to go from, being a group member at Sheena's Place to taking on a role where I'm inviting them to host an event at our university and speak about some of the challenges that I went through and hopefully, change it. So, students who are at the university feel like they're empowered to access resources and that those around them are empowered to support them at university, because it can be hard. It can be hard to be at university and to deal with the increase in stress and also have a mental illness to battle alongside of that. That's hard. And so one of the things that we like to do at Active Minds is change the conversation about mental health and mental illness so that, as a community, we're more empowered to support each other. So I found that really meaningful.
Well, you're doing meaningful work all the time. And this podcast is no exception. Really appreciate you taking time and being so open and honest about your story, helping us promote Bell Labs Talk Day, which is January 26th, text, tweet, Instagram, all the things to raise money for mental health programs, and as well as keeping an eye on activities around Eating Disorders Week, which is February 1st to 7th. So thanks, Sterling. Really appreciate it. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Daryl. I appreciate it. Work.